Up next, innovation in America. The federal investment in basic and applied research is projected to fall. That's to go down for the fifth year in a row now under the new budget, according to the American Association for the Advancement of Science. The National Academies says it's deeply concerned that the scientific and technological building blocks critical to our economic leadership are eroding at a time when many other nations are gathering strength. This summer, Bell Labs, the famous Bell Laboratories, credited with the invention of the transistor, the home to six Nobel Prize winners, shuttered its basic research department. Is Bell Labs a bellwether for the future of science in this country? Here to talk about how to encourage science and innovation is Judy Estrin. Judy is a Silicon Valley entrepreneur, the former chief technology officer at Cisco, and the author of the new book, Closing the Innovation Gap, Reigniting the Spark of Creativity in a Global Economy. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you. Let's talk about the gap. What do you mean by an innovation gap?
So when I talk about an innovation gap, many people have said to me, am I referring to a gap between the United States and other countries? And actually, I'm not, because I think that we should not think of innovation as a zero-sum game or a competition with other countries. We want the whole world to be innovative, but what we don't want is for everybody else to be innovative and for us to fall short. And so the gap that I'm referring to is the gap between where we are now and where we were once, as well as where we are now and where we could be, where we should be, and where we have the potential to be.
1-800-989-8255 if you'd like to talk about innovation on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. When you say from where we are now, from where we were once, why did that gap develop?
Well, I think there are a number of reasons, but when I say once, I think back to the couple of decades or the decade after World War II, when the country was really inspired to respect science, get involved in science, and both the research communities as well as the development environment in terms of developing corporations, developing products, the beginning of Silicon Valley and entrepreneurship, all of those forces were aligned and the leaders of the country were energized and inspired the country to get involved in science and technology and driving innovation throughout the country. As the decades progressed, and it began in the 70s when we started to decrease our investment in basic research and basic science, we started allocating research funds to certain fields and not others. In the corporate arena in the 70s and 80s, the focus was on efficiency and productivity. And as you focus more and more on being efficient, you often take out all of the room in your company for surprises, and that's where innovation often happens. And then as we accelerated into the internet bubble, even Silicon Valley became more about chasing money and less about really innovating and coming up with new technologies to change the world. And then when the bubble burst, we had the bursting of the bubble, the discovery of all of the corporate scandals, and the tragedy of 9/11, which created essentially the three together created an environment in which people became very, very risk averse. And the leadership of the country, as well as leaders throughout the business world, reacted by really pulling in as opposed to reacting the way the leaders did after World War II to Sputnik and rallying the country.
This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News, talking about innovation with Judy Estrin, who's a Silicon Valley entrepreneur, former chief technology officer at Cisco, and the author of a new book, Closing the Innovation Gap, Reigniting the Spark of Creativity in a Global Economy. How much of innovation depends on an individual's idea? In other words, a corporate leader, a Steve Jobs or somebody like that who says, I'm going to take the reins. And how much does it depend on government forcing people to be innovative?
Well, I think that, first of all, there are multiple types of innovation, and there is incremental innovation, which is just making something, continuously trying to improve on something, which can happen top down in large companies as well as small companies. But the innovation I think that we're really talking about is more disruptive breakthrough innovation that comes from first basic science and then advanced technology. And I think it can happen in many ways, but what can't happen is it can't be mandated. Mm-hmm. Real innovation needs to be inspired, and it needs you need to provide the support for innovation. And innovation in companies or in the country comes from leaders who provide a vision and provide the inspiration and the challenges to rally people to get involved. And what often stifles innovation, and whether it is a company responding to today's economic crisis or the country responding to threats like 9/11, that if leaders take that threat and simply use it to scare people and don't use it, don't turn it into a challenge which is then inspires people, you end up turning off the leadership function in each individual as opposed to turning it on. And what innovation really comes from is from individuals being inspired to lead and to contribute. Even people like Steve Jobs, who are visionaries that have led their organizations, he has done that by inspiring groups of people by providing a vision for the teams to then innovate.
Yeah. Well, very interesting. We have to take a break. We'll come back and talk lots more with Judy Estrin and take your calls. Our number 1-800-989-8255. Judy Estrin is author of Closing the Innovation Gap, Reigniting the Spark of Creativity in a Global Economy. She talks about people who say you just can't put a shingle out and say you've got an innovation team, but if you put the wrong kind of people in there, you'll not be successful. So if you can put the shingle out and don't attract the right people, we'll talk to Judy about how to do that. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour with Judy Estrin, author of the new book, Closing the Innovation Gap, Reigniting the Spark of Creativity in a Global Economy. And when we went to the break, I was quoting, actually, FedEx chief Rob Carter from your book, where you say, you quote him as saying, you can put your shingle out and say that you've got an innovation team, but if you put the wrong kind of people in there, you'll not be successful. But those who are able to innovate successfully seem to be able to do it time and time again. Innovators need to be what I call critically optimistic. Tell us about that.
So I talk about in the book five core values that I think that you need to have in any environment to really foster deep innovation. And I think they also apply to the type of people that you need to hire. And they are questioning, willingness to take risk, which means a willingness to fail, an openness, patience, and trust. And that critically optimistic that I'm referring to there is that when I say questioning, I'm not just talking about curiosity, and curiosity definitely drives innovation. And when you're looking to build teams that that are going to be innovative, you really want to look for people that are inherently very curious. But a second part of it is the necessity to the need to self-assess. So you need to not just question others, but be willing to question yourself and have some self-doubt about what you're doing. And the interesting thing about innovation is you need to be incredibly optimistic to get over the hurdles and obstacles that are thrown mm-hmm. in your way. But you need that aspect of self-assessment and self-doubt to be able to stop every once in a while and say, you know what, am I doing the right thing? Could I be doing this differently? Is there something else going on here or some surprises that I might see if I open my mind and look a little bit more broadly?
Mm-hmm. Got a multiple number of questions from folks in Second Life and from the phones asking basically the same thing, which is an obvious question at this point with the meltdown in the stock market in the last few weeks. Are we now folding up our tents a little bit and thinking, gee, I haven't got the money now to invest in innovation. I might have had a few bucks. That's all. They're all gone. I mean, is this something that you worry about?
Well, I do worry about it because the reason I wrote the book is I was worried about it to begin with, starting 2 years ago, that already we were not, there was too much incremental innovation, that the country has become too short-term focused. And so there's a lot of incremental innovation going on at the surface, but planting the seeds for the future, I talk about having an innovation deficit, that we're reaping the benefits of 10, 20, 30 years ago, but we're not planting the seeds for future innovation. And I do worry about the economic crisis just making that worse. But the companies that I see that are in a strong position and have strong leaders are actually not doing that. What they are looking at this as is a time to continue to invest in key areas of innovation. And so it's not that they're not cutting back. All companies need to look at their expenses and adapt to the new realities. But, you know, to quote someone, Obama, from the debate, you don't use an axe, you use a scalpel in doing that. And so the easiest thing to do is just to cut off all research and cut off all future investments. But that's absolutely the wrong approach, because when we emerge from this, and whether it is 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years, we will emerge from this. Those companies that have continued to invest and keep some part of their budgets investing in the future will come out stronger.
Tell us a bit about the core areas, the core long-term innovations that you see we need to do.
Well, in terms of fields and areas of science that we need to be focused on, I will say that one of the things I think we need to do is make sure that we're investing across all fields of science, because you never know what problems are going to face you 10, 20, or 30 years from now. One of the problems we have today is that we starved investment in physical sciences and environmental sciences for decades, and today we really need those scientists, and we lost a generation of scientists as we look at our problems in terms of energy. But if you look at the major problems we have as a country and as a planet, we need to be investing in alternative energies. We need to be investing in those technologies and energy sources that will be clean and scalable so that we can reverse climate change. And we need to continue to understand climate change better so that we can change our behaviors and reverse those trends. Clearly, healthcare, affordable and accessible healthcare, while not stifling innovation in that area. So there's been so much progress in the healthcare arena. You were just talking about it in the area of genetics. And one of my concerns is that people will say the way to reduce costs in healthcare is to stop innovation of new pharmaceuticals or new medical procedures. That's not the way to reduce costs. We need to look across the whole system and make it more affordable and available while not stifling innovation. Clearly, education is another area that we need to innovate in the way we change our education system, because it today is not set up to produce innovators. It's set up to either produce people that don't graduate or graduate with the skills to test well, but not necessarily with the skills to collaborate or the skills to frame the questions. And if you want innovators, you need people that know how to ask questions, not just answer the questions on a test.
Is that something you teach people, or is that something that we have to find in ourselves? I mean, it has to be brought out. Is that a skill or a craft you teach someone?
You know, I think that we all look at little kids, and I think people are inherently curious and inherently question. How often do parents get tired of their 2 or 3 year old asking why? And I think actually our education system beats it out of us. And so I think it's a question of, yes, I think it can be taught, but it's not taught as a subject. It has to do with the way you teach kids and the way you parent kids or the way you mentor kids. And I think our approach to children as they grow is increasingly to essentially stifle those attributes, the core values that I talked about, that are so necessary for innovation.
1-800-989-8255. Brian in Omaha. Hi, Brian.
Good afternoon. Actually, what you were just talking about is exactly what I was calling about. Was my question is from the perspective of a parent. I have a 9-year-old boy who is, I think, brilliant, loves science and loves math. And I've been increasingly frustrated with the ability of the public schools to even teach to his level or even try to foster that curiosity like you were talking about. And I just wondered what I can do as a parent of him and what I can do as a citizen to encourage better education for these kind of kids.
Yeah.
So I think there are probably two parts to that question. One is, what can you do to influence the education system overall? Because there's no question in my mind that we need to change the way we educate our kids, not just to produce more scientists, and it's we need to inspire our kids to stay interested in science, because up until around the fourth or fifth grade, kids tend to be interested, and then we see an incredible drop-off as they move towards high school. But we also need everybody who graduates or even doesn't graduate, we need every citizen of this country to be more scientific and technologically literate. Because today, to make decisions about your health, to know how to vote, you need to have a basic understanding of science and technology. So what can you do in terms of changing the education system? I think that there are nonprofits that are working in this area that you can get involved in. You can get involved with your local school board, because a lot of educational decisions are made at the local level or the state level. And how you vote in this election will end up influencing what happens with education in this country down the line. We've actually taken multiple steps backwards over the last 8 years, both because of educational policy like No Child Left Behind, which backfired in terms of inspiring kids and teaching kids in science, but also the overall culture in the country, the lack of respect for science, the seemingly not viewing scientific evidence as important in the decision making of the country. So I think how you vote can make a big difference in terms of education. Now, the other part of it is, what can you do as a parent for your own kids, or if you're not a parent and you mentor other kids, that will help develop them in spite of the education system? Because in fact, it's going to take at least a generation to solve the problems we have in education. And I think there are things you can do to encourage your child to explore, whether it's online or offline, to give them room to think and get them thinking about asking questions, and really listen to them when they ask questions. And if they're asking questions, don't just shut them up, but engage them in discussion so that they grow up understanding that critically thinking about something is important.
Is there? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, there are a couple of nonprofits that are working in this area. One that I talk about in the book, which is actually a for-profit company, is Sally Ride Science. And Sally Ride, the first woman astronaut, has started a company to produce clubs and products.
Well, we always get back to the space race sometime or other, because it's a nostalgic look back, is it not? I was a child of the space race. We were all very excited. We had something that united the country. And it was obviously a political move in the end, but it was a technological feat, you know, a tremendous technological feat that everybody was interested in. Is there nothing today that we could use? And, you know, we don't own space anymore. I mean, you touched on a bit of becoming green and green technologies and saving energy. Could we not unite around something like that for everybody to take part in?
Oh, absolutely. And when I interviewed over 100 people in writing the book, and many of them said to me, you know, Judy, what we need is another Sputnik. And I would walk out of the room and say, well, wait a minute, we have another Sputnik. We have threats that are just as powerful as Sputnik. Our leadership, however, is not using those threats to inspire us. They are using those threats to keep us scared, perhaps, and nobody has rallied the nation around them. And so the most significant of them out there is the combination of lessening or eliminating our energy dependence and reversing climate change. And you take the two of those together, i.e. the green movement, and there's absolutely no reason why we as a country should not rally around that to inspire businesses, nonprofits, and every citizen in the country to get involved. It would create new jobs. It would change the psyche of the nation. And there are other problems, such as I talked about health care, such as our standing in the world, security, that are also threats that could be used to rally the country. And in the book, I talk about these and say, you know what, each one of these deserves its own moonshot. Mm-hmm. The one that is the most present in people's minds, I believe, and is really something we should be starting to do right now, is this whole notion of green, the combination of energy independence mm-hmm. and reversing climate change.
Talking with Judy Estrin on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. She is author of Closing the Innovation Gap, Reigniting the Spark of Creativity in a Global Economy. Our number is 1-800-989-8255. Let's see if we can get a phone call or two in before we have to go. Let's go to Steve in San Jose. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, and I think it's a great subject. But I do have a difference of opinion between the guest speaker when she mentioned that it is, you know, we're in a dire state. Personally, I think this is the most exciting time in human history. And to say that the last couple of decades, when the internet bubble has come and gone and nothing, is just really oversimplifying the issue here. For example, the internet is by far the most disruptive innovation by far. For example, since the telegraph of how humans have communicated, and the cell phone as well, and many, many more other areas in terms of medical research, right, for biochemistry, for...
I'm running out of time, but I want to... So summarizing, you're saying we are in a very exciting time.
Yes,
and
we are in a very exciting time.
Judy, how do you...
So you actually just made my case. I'm not saying that we have no innovation, number one, but everything that you just named, and I was involved in the early development of the internet, but from the internet to the cell phone to the PC to the discovery of DNA and our DNA, if you really think about when that began, the seeds of those innovations were planted 30 years ago. In my book, when I was interviewing Marc Andreessen, who was the developer of the first browser, he said to me, Judy, I was able to do it so quickly because it was the icing on the cake that had been baking for 30 years. So there is no question that there's lots of interesting innovation going on in mobile technologies, in healthcare, in consumer internet, but we have stopped over the last couple of decades in planting the seeds that will continue that innovation out 10, 20, 30 years from now. And if we don't plant those seeds today, and if we continue to just build on icing the cake that we started baking 30 years from now, we will hit a wall. So today we still lead in innovation, but we have become more and more short-term focused, and we're not planting the seeds for the future. We are not investing for the future.
Especially in our kids, in our education system, mm-hmm. things like that. All right, we've run out of time. Judy, I want to thank you for taking time to be with us. Judy Estrin is a Silicon Valley entrepreneur, the former chief technology officer at Cisco, and the author of the new book, Closing the Innovation Gap, Reigniting the Spark of Creativity in a Global Economy. Thank you, Judy.
Thank you, and thank you for doing this show.
You're welcome. Greg Smith composed our theme music, and we had help today, as always, and we needed a lot from NPR librarian Kima Leski. If you want to write us, serve over to our website at sciencefriday.com. We're podcasting and blogging and doing all kinds of great things over there, and looking for your help and your contribution. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.